The biggest corporate news on HN today is Rocket Lab's acquisition of Iridium. 419 points, 277 comments, and it deserves the space it's getting. Iridium operates 66 active low Earth orbit satellites, providing global satellite phone and data service. It's the company that famously went bankrupt in 1999 after burning through billions, building a constellation that launched too early for the market to absorb, then got acquired at pennies on the dollar and quietly became indispensable infrastructure for aviation, maritime, and remote industrial operations. Rocket Lab acquiring it is not a small deal.
The strategic logic is layered. Rocket Lab has been expanding from launch services into space systems. They build satellites and satellite components, not just rockets. Acquiring Iridium gives them an operational constellation, a revenue-generating satellite communications business, and a demonstration platform for the next generation Iridium Next follow-on services. The HN thread is comparing this to SpaceX's vertical integration, but the comparison has limits. SpaceX built Starlink from scratch. Rocket Lab is acquiring mature operational infrastructure with a 25-year track record.
The Iridium constellation has a specific technical characteristic that makes it strategically irreplaceable. Its satellites are cross-linked, meaning they relay data directly between satellites rather than bouncing signals down to ground stations constantly. That architecture provides truly global coverage, including polar regions that geosynchronous satellites can't reach and that most LEO constellations don't prioritize. For defense, search and rescue, and scientific applications in Antarctica or the Arctic, there is no substitute.
From a market structure standpoint, this creates an interesting competitive dynamic. Starlink dominates broadband LEO. Iridium, under Rocket Lab, dominates narrowband global coverage for maritime and aviation. The question is whether Rocket Lab moves Iridium upmarket toward broadband competition with Starlink or keeps it focused on its current niche where it has essentially no competition. The HN comments are split, with some people arguing the smart move is to keep Iridium's differentiated position rather than fight Starlink on bandwidth.
Meanwhile, Antares Industries achieved criticality of their Mark Zero reactor. 31 points, 12 comments. Criticality in reactor terms means the fission chain reaction is self-sustaining. The neutron population is stable, which is the fundamental proof of concept moment for a new reactor design. Antares is a private company working on compact nuclear reactors, and the Mark Zero is their first prototype. This is the kind of announcement that gets modest HN scores because it sounds obscure, but is technically a genuine milestone. Reaching criticality is not something you can fake or approximate. Either the physics works or it doesn't.
The "Should Every Baby's DNA Be Sequenced?" piece from The Economist rounds out the science coverage, and it's a question with no clean answer. The medical argument for universal newborn sequencing is compelling. Early identification of genetic conditions that are treatable or manageable when caught early could prevent significant suffering. The counterarguments involve data security, the psychological burden of probabilistic health information, insurance discrimination risks, and questions about whose interests a universal program would actually serve.
The HN thread only has 5 comments on this one, but the few that exist are substantive. Someone makes the point that we already do universal newborn screening. The heel prick test for PKU and other metabolic disorders has been standard for decades. The question is whether whole genome sequencing is a difference in degree or a difference in kind. The volume and sensitivity of genomic data and the permanence of that information suggest it might be a difference in kind, even if the intent is the same.
The open source low-tech movement is quieter, but philosophically interesting. 296 points, 60 comments. The opensourcelowtech.org initiative is cataloging and promoting technologies that are open source, not just in the software sense, but in the broader sense. Designs that can be built with locally available materials, repaired without specialized tools, and understood without an engineering degree. Think solar food dryers, hand-powered water pumps, biogas digesters. It's a counterpoint to the high-tech solutions-first approach that dominates HN most days.
The dark sky lighting story connects to this aesthetic. 216 points, 40 comments. SavingOurStars.org is advocating for lighting design that eliminates light pollution by directing light downward rather than outward and upward. The HN thread gets into the genuine environmental science. Artificial light at night disrupts circadian rhythms in humans and animals, interferes with insect navigation, and affects plant growth cycles. The technology to fix this is simple and mature. It's a question of policy and incentives, not innovation.
Now, let's do something we try to do regularly on this show, which is interrogate the thing we're most confident about. Today's most confident claim, both from the HN community and frankly from our own coverage, is that Qwen 3.627b represents a genuine capability breakthrough for local development, and that this moment, where capable models run on consumer hardware, is straightforwardly good for developer autonomy and privacy.
Walk me through why you might be wrong about that, Marcus.
The assumption underneath the local LLM enthusiasm is that capability and accessibility moving down market is democratizing. And there's something to that. Developers who can't afford API costs or don't want data leaving their systems gain real capabilities they didn't have before. But here's the counterargument. The infrastructure that makes Qwen 3.627b good enough to use, the training compute, the RLHF labor, the evaluation infrastructure, all of that still requires frontier-scale investment. Alibaba spent enormous resources creating this model. The open weight release is a strategic decision, not a gift, and strategic decisions can be reversed or redirected.
You're pointing at the dependency problem. Even if the weights are open, the training capability that produces new generations of those weights is concentrated. So the local developer is local at inference time, but dependent on a small number of powerful actors for the training that makes the model useful. That's different from, say, open source software, where anyone with enough skill can meaningfully contribute to the core product.
Right? And there's a second assumption that I think the HN thread largely accepts without stress testing, that 27B is the right parameter count for this generation of hardware. The benchmarks show it's good on the tasks that were benchmarked. But the HN discussion involves a lot of tasks that map well to current benchmarks: coding, question answering, summarization. What if the tasks that matter most for the next wave of software development require capabilities that only show up at 70B or 200B? Then the sweet spot moment is actually a temporary window before the capability bar moves out of reach again.
So, if we're wrong about the local LLM democratization story, what should we be watching for? I'd say three signals. First, whether open weight models continue to be released on a cadence that keeps pace with frontier capability improvements, or whether there's a growing gap between what you can run locally and what the frontier offers. Second, whether the use cases people are solving with 27B local models stay in the hobbyist and developer tier, or whether they start showing up in production systems that create actual business value. If the latter, the economics of local deployment get much more interesting and the strategic calculus for Alibaba changes. Third, regulatory pressure on open weight releases. The EUAI Act and proposed U.S. legislation both have provisions that could restrict releasing model weights above certain capability thresholds. If Qwen 3.6 is useful today, partly because it benefited from a regulatory window, that window might not stay open. Those are the right signals. I'd add one more. Watch for whether the performance claims hold up on tasks that weren't in the original benchmark suite. The HN community's enthusiasm is based on individual developers' experiences with specific workloads. The moment someone tries to use Qwen 3.6 for a workload it wasn't optimized for and gets poor results, the sweet spot narrative will need revision.